petition number 9489, reel 5.
Tom Phillips, tape 5. Yes, you were saying about the German infantry.
We couldn't understand why they didn't try and counterattack. But they relied on these wonderful German machine gunners to hold us up. So we couldn't understand it. In fact, they were the best trained soldiers in the world at the time. Not like us, civilian soldiers then. Most of the regulars had been killed before that. So we couldn't understand it. Well, we took it that we had demoralized them. We had demoralized them because they had been so dug in these big underground shelters, 30 foot down. They had sheltered about 300 or 400. I tell you what we found when we came up to them. We have gone zigzag up, but before, after the second pillbox, we only managed about 30 yards at a time, a pillbox in the night, that's all we're doing. We were four divisions. The first time under Plumer, I never saw him. He didn't know much about it. He was 20 miles behind the line. He wouldn't risk coming up to see us. And we were the 49th Yorkshire, 146, 147, 148. Perfect. Next to us on the right was a lovely 38th Welsh Division. On our other side, the lovely 51st Scottish Highlanders, wonderful troops. And on the other side, another division, Yorkshire Division 66, what they call the Sheffield Pals there. And we were four, known as the First Army Corps, the leading, they had great faith in us. Once you got to Yorkshire, and a Welshman and a Scotch, nothing could hold us up. We didn't know what to do, but on the way, after the second pillbox, there was a young Yorkshire lad, infantry. The mud, the thick mud, you see, in a 6 foot, holding him up with his rifle and bayonet on his side, tin that down in the bottom of the shell. I don't know how many dead were in him there. And looking up into heaven, he was more than about 18 years of age, infantry lad, and he had fair hair like myself. And I never saw such a wonderful sight in my life. This young lad, the earth holding him up, looking up into heaven. I never saw such a wonderful smile in my life. Smiling, his soul and enter, no doubt, into heaven. I never saw such a wonder. I wish somebody could take a photo of him. He was very much like me, fair hair and curly hair as well, looking up into heaven. Oh, what a glorious sight.
But he was dead.
These people today, like Reagan and Thatcher, had seen that sight. They never think about another war. Oh, it was wonderful to see that lad. And I don't know how many dead were under him. So I left him there. Oh, it put great courage into one. So we went past him then. They were killing all the time. It was a slaughterhouse, a bath blood. Everything was slipping on. If you went up the trench, climbing the slope up, it was slipping down with blood all over the place. Oh, it's too. I'm sorry. It's almost too terrible to tell you all this.
Well, I wondered about the noise as well, Tom. Yes. Was it a very noisy place? Were there people shrieking and groaning and shouting? Yes. The noise of it.
Oh, it was terrible, the noise, but we quelled the our artillery, field artillery, had all been wiped out. Old Jerry could spot them. We had to fight without any field artillery until we were nearly at the top, except we were once advancing, then the big guns from nearly as back as Popperins, the big heavy guns, could fire 5 miles or something straight. There were more than that behind us on the straight line as a crow. And looking back at those big guns, big bombardment, like stars shooting out in the dark, big stars shooting out. I never saw. We were advancing under a creeping barrage with these guns, and not one of those big guns ever caught us. We're just keeping up, keep the firing above the ridge quiet. There was firing at the top of the ridge to put these German field guns out of action. I never saw anything so wonderful in my life. As watching that sight, you could think it was stars coming under of the earth, you know. The most wonderful sight I ever saw. And we were creeping like that for nearly 3 months. Remember, not on any poor iron rations. For 3 months, we never had a drink, hot drink, through that winter, right until we came back. And no sleep, except if you were standing in a shell hole and with a waterproof sheet over the top to keep us. There was not much frost, you see. It was a mild winter, but we had some rain to clear the ground a bit. And the big shell holes with the spring water filled up to the top. If you fell in one of those, you'd never come out. Then they were taking, they're bringing rations up now by little mules, not much bigger than a donkey, to us. Two full sandbags on the back of it, and two lads leading the donkey, the mule. Oh, what wonderful animals. They were cool as a, they wouldn't murmur, nothing at all. And it was my job, oh, terrible job, and another fellow, to go meet them down the zigzag. Not, they couldn't come up right to us. So we were all right. We managed a few times, once a week, I think it was. Iron rations, big, like dog biscuits with a lot of vitamins, and packets of raisins for the blood, you know, cure the blood, keep it from germs. And some of the boys, and woodbines. I never smoked, so I used to have a gamble with them. You give me your raisin ration packet to put in my, I'll give you my fags. Oh, they were delighted. So we were there, and one evening in the dark, Jerry was firing all the time on our zigzag, the truck coming up and down, and poor old mule and the two boys, the mule got a direct hit over the trench grids, flat out. The boys and the rations thrown into a big shallow full of water and mud. Nobody could get out of it. And we had to go back with the bad news, boys. Everything has disappeared. We got nothing to give you. So forth it went like that. But we were like badgers, like wild animals, really. We got used to it. We were in full float at it. Let's get this war over.
Yes, I was wondering, Tom, what your morale was like.
Oh, mine. I was singing all the time. I was known as the minstrel lad to the war has gone. I was nicknamed that. I was nicknamed, what else? Oh, the lads stood on the burning deck in the Newport. I was did the job with that boy stood under the burning, but I was on the blinking ruins with the shells bursting all around me. The one good thing that those shells did, they killed all my chats. They killed all the chats. That's the only thing that could ever kill them. And I was going into the hospital, all the chats had gone. Oh, that's the only good blessing about it. And I came back from that job with new clothes. Everything was too bad. They had to burn everything. It was too soaked. Couldn't fumigate. My only things that was all right was my boots. That gas didn't go through my boots.
Could I ask you, Tom, did the weather change while you were
weather,
there?
Weather changed. We were lucky. If we had that winter of 1916, we'd all have perished. Jerry was all right. He was down these big dugouts. So we were going on, and I was sorry for the... I'm very fond of animals. To see that little mule flattened out, directed, everything gone. And a little fellow with me, Scholes, he was a new recruit there, and he didn't have a very good chest. He couldn't follow me very well. He was a nice little fellow. When he joined us, he said, I will be killed within a week. Oh, I said, Scholes, you keep alongside me. I see that you last longer than that. So old Scholes, the little fellow, with chest trouble, he wasn't fit to be in there, followed me, and he was the one that happened to him, the weakest fellow they could ever send for me to bring the rations up. We're doing it once a week. We never had a hot drink. We had a job to get pure water. They used to bring it up in petrol cans, you know, on the back of the, and we had to put it in our bottles, drinking bottle, you know, we had. And we had looked after that well. Other trouble with that old rations, there was a lot of fellows who had very weak teeth. They couldn't chew those biscuits. Those had pity, that too, because they were good stuff. They kept us alive. But there were a lump of cheese they could tackle. I never took cheese except keep on those raisins and that biscuits. I had some in reserve in my haversack. Kept one alive.
Could I ask you about the change in the weather? Did it get more dry?
No. The soil was so rich with spring water, it never dried, except the shallows got frozen up a few times. That was very good.
Did that help?
That helped a lot. Now, we were going zigzag. No field artillery. Everyone had been knocked out. Jerry could see them all, and they couldn't replace them because Jerry was high up. He could spot everything from the top of the ridge. So we advanced up, taking a pillbox at the night. Oh, we were losing about dead and missing, remember? I never saw a wounded chap been rescued at all. They had to bleed themselves to death in shallows and everywhere. I never saw such a sight in my life. I couldn't help them. It was impossible. They were on their last leg. I wish I could have been, but there were no stretcher bearers. Whether they were killed, nobody to help the wounded at all. Dead and missing. Whereas in the Somme, the wounded were looked after. Oh, it was a terrible sight, Chief. I'm sorry I'm giving you the worst type of the war. So we were going on, and who should come to join us? Damn, I had to go and meet them halfway down the zigzag pass to lead them up to our front where we were facing old Jerry. We were in shallows, and only about 40 yards from the summit. Who should come in? And I had to lead them to join us in the middle of the night dark. And you had to be careful. There was nothing to show where you were, except if we went off the zigzag path into Shalol. So, you two Australians. No. What wonderful troops. The Australian machine gunners joined us. They were great lads. Wonderful lads. So, I was leading them, and I couldn't find our advanced post. I was taking them almost into the German lines, I think. Hey, boys, where are you? Jokies, yeah? And in the middle of the night, but old Jerry could hear us, to hear me, and I had a very strong Welsh accent. And the Australian said, boys, we'll have to finish this fellow off. I had a strong Welsh accent, it sounded like a German. We got a German spy leading us in, and they were preparing to do me in. At last, the boys, here we are, jockey. The Australians got in at once amongst our pillboxes and shallows. Oh, they were great lads. The officers mixed with them, everybody like one. I never had such fun in my life. And these Australians, they were with us. Oh, damn, we were safe as houses. And with these Australians, fresh, you see, yes. Strong fellows.
Yes. What was it you liked so much about the Australians, Tom? Yes.
They're wonderful. They were some of the best soldiers I've ever met. They didn't know what danger was. They're so fit, you know. Not like us, been 2 or 3 months in. We were nearly jiggered, almost. And without the proper food or cold rations for 3 months, nearly. Never saw a hot drink or anything, or a tot of rum, nothing at all. Except these cold rations. I had damn good teeth. I could chew them and raisins. So the Australians were with us, and we were advancing with them. And at last, we got into a German big dugout, 30 feet down. I had spotted, oh yes, before that, I spotted that the Germans had evacuated that big, they didn't know, huge dugout. And so, I was the fellow, I had to go down to try and find my captain, report that the big dugout the Germans had left. If I did, it became daylight. The German field guns opened out on me. Salvos of 4 at a time. I had a long way to go in and out, and he knew every foot of the ground. So there was one dropping in front of me, about 15 yards old or less. One behind me, one left, one right. But I didn't believe in stopping. I was on the trot. Jerry, if I went back, no. I got a message, urgent message for the captain to tell them. And I was smothered in mud. And I was, as I was going, the lovely rich soil saved me. I was covered in mud, and I, one piece of something went through my overcoat, everything, and I got the mark here. You just peel, just that. No, oh, jokey, I know what to do. I bandaged myself up and got through to the captain. Oh, Jerry must have used the distance. I must have used hundreds of shells, field guns. They didn't go very deep. And the nice, rich ground smothered them almost, and I only got one wound, but it bled like hell. And I didn't tell anybody. I cured myself with it. I had a first aid bandage. I lost quite a lot of blood. I didn't tell captain or anyone, or else I thought I'd leave them or something, but
This dugout, Tom, that was taken, could I ask you about that? The dugout. Was it a very well-fitted dugout compared with the English ones?
Yes. So the Australians came in with me. The Germans had fled. Enough room, bunkers, two or three deep, electric stoves, cooking, everything possible there to enjoy themselves. No wonder the devils had become demoralized. They didn't know what war was. They were everything. They didn't have it so good in their life, and they never risked coming to meet us. And so we said, one or two Australians came in with me. No, boys, we better leave now. And it's all clear. We couldn't stay there because we had work to do, chasing Jerry up the top. So time came then. I'd been 3 months there, October, November, December, before the Canadians came through us. We left the Australians there, and the Canadians came through them, and they had the glory of taking a little bit, only about 20 yards to the summit. They had the glory of taking the summit. But I never came across the Canadians because we had been taken out. We left the Australians.
Was it right, do you think, was it right that the Canadians had the honour of taking the ridge?
Yes, of the summit. Only 20 or 30 yards they had to go. And we had fought all the way up. I don't know how I stuck it. Of course, I had the Divine Spirit telling me what to do. You know, as if he'd talking to me. They had the honour. I don't know how they got on afterwards. And we had to then go down. We were relieved in January.
What were the losses? What were the losses of the 49th Division?
Losses we lost. We used to lose about 40,000 between the whole division. 40,000 a week, dead and missing. No talk about the wounded. There were no wounded. We didn't see any. They were dead everywhere. Wait a minute, I've got to get another handkerchief. One of the biggest losses, we lost about 400,000 in 3 months at the rate of about 40,000 a week. And the new recruits coming all the time. And out of our original that started it in our machine gun company, I don't think other originals, we have more than five or six left. Now they're coming down, being relieved now, through those zigzags, and Jerry with the guns blustering away. Not so much then, because the Canadians were on top of the ridge, kept the firing a good bit off. Do you know, I'd been all that time, the fellows had to pick me up as we were marching down Manai Road, falling asleep. They lift me up. I couldn't feel my feet walking. I was dead beat. I hadn't had sleep for about 3 months. The fresh air, the open air, that's a secret. Once you got the open air, day and morning, night and day, like wild animals, you can stick a lot. That kept me alive. So I managed to struggle walking, the boys helping me, because there's only four or five that went through it from the start that came out alive. And these new recruits coming out of this, holding me up, and I managed to walk. We pushed into Ypres Barracks, down Hellfire Corner into Ypres, big, heavy walls. We had to go up above. I fell asleep there for 2 days without food or anything, never woke up. After waking up, I was fit as a lark, and and the German big guns used to throw shells right into the yard. We used to play hell with her, but it didn't bother me at all. We had good feed and everything. I was fit as a fiddle again. And you were there resting a bit. Then I think we were sent. Oh, wait a minute. In the beginning of, I met a fellow from Lampeter. He was with the Sheffield Pals. He was in charge of a big mule going up and down with a shell, field guns, shells on the back of them. Cyril Jones. He became a doctor, and he finished up a doctor in Sheffield. Short little fellow with a big fur coat. And they sent me on holidays. The first holiday since I came in to France. Never had a rest anywhere. I was the only one sent down. They took me down to the boat. I think it was too long, I don't know where. And I had no food or anything. Nothing. We'd been on. We had a bit of bully beef and had a bit of plum and apple jam. and raisins and things like that. So I told Cyril, I met him. I was going home. I'm going to call in Lampeter. I said to see your mother and your sister. We're very friendly with his sister, Isabel Jones. They were, and I took a German bayonet with me and other things to take up to his mother. So I came back as fit as a fiddle, and on the way back he was going up again with the shells. That's a funny thing, wasn't it? To meet him twice, the only fellow I ever met that I knew.